Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Chris from Natick.
Okay.
And we'd like to thank the Dan and the Unity Hunting Group and primary purpose. See, he told me just a few seconds ago, and I'm getting older, and those two things just don't work like they used to. So we'd like to thank you guys for inviting Chris and I up here. It means a lot to us, it really does. We're very honored to be able to go to any place and be able to share what we have studied and learned about NA history. And, you know, we are NA history researchers. Just a real quick thing about how this particular PowerPoint came together. We have another one we're going to show you tomorrow afternoon. It came together a little bit different. But this one came together really and truly. We met each other in 2007, and we started getting together discussing NA history. Okay? When two people discussing something brings on the energy, it really just does. It sparks. You know, it brings about the spark. Well, we met a man named Kermit, who some of you guys may know. Kermit had a rolling history collection. And so he invited us to come up to his place in Charlottesville and take a look at his collection, because I had an old comic book collection. So we horse traded one night. And literally about 2 o'clock in the morning, Kermit goes and he disappears somewhere for a little while. And Chris is over there just scanning away. Scanning. Got this flatbed scanner and he's scanning away. And Kermit comes in and he's got these two banker boxes and he just drops them down on the floor and he says, "This is the Holy Grail, folks." And I'm like, "Kermit, is this really important for me to stop what I'm doing?" And he's like, "Yeah, yeah." What they were was Joseph Pease's archives. And Joseph Pease was the treasurer of the World Literature Committee during the process of making our basic text. Okay? In those archives were the raw data, some raw data of actually the process of collecting the information that people had written in about what to write about. It was, from all the way from the raw data to the actual book itself to the we got the cut and paste copies from the first literature conference to the second literature conference to the third literature conference, and all the way to the mailing slips for the gray review form that Jim had back here that you guys got to see, and many other things. This sparked a keen interest in both Chris and I. And Kermit came down to Raleigh, North Carolina to do a history talk, and we asked him if he would bring those boxes. So Chris had a bright idea that we could scan those in a weekend, okay? Ha. 3 months later, Kermit was nice enough to leave them with us, and we got it all done. Now, mind you, this is before we learned about high-speed scanners, okay? And that led to meeting another man, he lives in Atlanta, Georgia, by the name of Bo S. And Bo came up to speak at my home group for our 25th anniversary. And during that time, Chris and I asked him if he would be willing for us to scan his archives. And he said, "Yes, I believe I would." So I went down to Atlanta, Georgia with my pickup truck and picked up 20 banker's boxes worth of materials, brought them back to my house and put them on my dining room table. And Bo and I, at 2 o'clock in the morning, go through and take a short inventory, because I had to get him back on the plane at 8:30 in the morning. And Chris and I began the long process of scanning those 20 boxes, which, by the way, we still have 10 more to scan. We just gave up, okay? We stopped. And, so that is going to be some, if not quite all, well, that is going to be a lot of what you see on here is the work from that started the process of learning how our basic text was actually written. I did not know. I mean, I really didn't. 2007, I knew the book was there. I had no idea how it was written, but I learned. And we've since had a wonderful time of interviewing quite a few people and learning a lot of bit about it. And we're really just very happy to come and be able to share that with you guys tonight. Okay? So, with that, anything you'd like to say?
Yeah, it was about 3 hours.
hours ago when Boyd was getting dressed, and I said, yeah, we're about to lose all our credibility with this tie. We either get a UNAA or a UNARC when we come into So, he rides a Harley, I got two tattoos, so.
But I'll tell you, Alex, why I asked Chris to do this one time is a real simple matter, in that I was thinking about it. You know, our fellowship began in 1953, and it grew very slowly up until this perfect storm happened around between 79 and 83. And the perfect storm is the creation of Basic Techs, the opening of treatment centers, and with the money that the Basic Techs brought in, it allowed a rural service office to become pretty functioning and allowed it developed an infrastructure that allowed it to grow and go ballistic in the 80s, okay? I mean, it really did. It blew up, so to speak. So I do it out of, for me, respect, you know, because the Basic Techs really kind of started it. So thank you.
I do it out of respect.
Yeah, I know you do. I know you do. Because you don't want to hear me bitch at you.
Yeah. So. No, it's all. Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you. You know, why do we do this? Why are we presenting on this stuff? You know, very simply, I wouldn't be clean without the Basic Techs. Understand the blood, sweat, and tears that went into getting that book to make recovery available to me and other addicts. And to think back to the time when recovery was not as available as it is today. And to think about the work that we still need to do to help carry that message. So that's why we do this. And so we're going to go through this presentation, and this is kind of our understanding based on the information we've gathered. There's people that you'll hear from this weekend that live the history, you know. And then there's like Boyd and I, we've been clean for a while, but we haven't lived through a lot of this stuff. So we're presenting on it from the perspective of researching it, drawing our conclusions from it. And when we do this, we realize that this is incomplete. And we hope that the information will spark an interest and challenge people to say, hey, there's an error there, or there's a gap missing, and here's some of that information so that we can get a more full and complete story. And so to try to give a sense of, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that went into the writing of Basic Techs, we're going to present this history to you through the words of people who were there. We're going to present it to you through the words of actual literature conferences that are going on, through pictures, and through information, and hopefully give everyone an opportunity to say, wow, this is what it was like when this process was going on, that has provided this book that has helped countless addicts find recovery. And so we're going to start off, a little thing that we like to do is just to kind of run through, as Jim was kind of mentioning when he was talking about, like, different pieces of literature that were available in Narcotics Anonymous when people got clean. So, did anybody get clean? Does anybody get clean on the sixth edition, meaning that your clean date is October 2008 or later? If so, we'd like you to stand up so we can. And did anyone get clean on the fifth edition? I got clean on the fifth edition in 1990, right? Okay? Anybody get clean on the fourth edition, which came out in 87? For some people, this was the text that they stand up. Let's.
Yeah.
How about the third revised? Anybody get clean on that? November 86.
All right.
Anybody get clean on the third edition, came out in 84? So as you start thinking back, you know, like you start thinking about the amount of literature that was around now as compared to then. Second edition came out September of 83. Anybody get clean on the second edition? All right. And then we had the first edition, the blue one, and as Jim said, the red, which came out April 27th, 1983. Anybody get clean on the first edition? All right. Before that, some people got clean on the approval form, which was sent around for approval from all the home groups. And this was printed in November 81. So some people came into Narcotics Anonymous, and that's the only literature that they were using to recover by. Anybody get clean on the approval form? The gray review form, which Jim had shown and talked about, printed February 81. Did anybody get clean on the gray review form? All right, we just like doing this for historical perspective, too. White Book released, this version released in 1976. Anybody clean on this? The really old White Book from 62, 63. And we get clean on the Buff Book. Because, like, we always do this as a little bit of a test, because we're waiting for somebody to stand up and say, yeah, I got clean on that book, and at which point we sit down and say, please, come up and tell us about it.
Talk to us more even boring, though. All right.
Okay, what we've got now is we're going to give you a little snapshot of the evolution of literature for addicts to give you a little, just really and truly a little context of what came before the basic text. And in March of 1949, Bobby B., the secretary of the General Service Office of AA, wrote to Clarence B., the secretary of Addicts Anonymous in Lexington, Kentucky. And what she told him was, but you can, in reading our material, substitute the word drugs for alcohol. And the addicts at Lexington, Kentucky, made a pamphlet, this right here, called Our Way of Life in April of 1949. Now this is taken, it's adapted from the AA's pamphlet, A Way for Life, okay? They adapted it, and here's some of the interesting stuff that Chris and I found out in it right here. It's, it says here that the idea that somehow, someday, we should be able to control and enjoy our drug taking is a great obsession of many addicts. And here it is. Alcoholics Anonymous calls this thinking wet. Addicts Anonymous calls this needling ourselves.
So what we see here is addicts looking for recovery, literature for them, writing Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous saying, we don't have any literature for drug addicts. But you can take our literature and change the words so that it fits you. And that's kind of like with movements. That's the first evolution of a movement and a fellowship that's growing and starts adapting existing literature. And so that's kind of the first start for addicts in trying to get literature for themselves.
49. Yeah, 49. Addicts Anonymous started in February the 16th of 1947 in a place called Lexington, Kentucky, in a U.S. public health hospital. You'll learn about that more tomorrow. It's the first group of addicts that met, period, for the purpose of recovery using the AA model to recover. Okay. Yeah. Now, we move on a little bit further, and this is called Our Way of Life. In February of 1951, we know that it was here in February of 51. It's actually a little bit more, because a man named Danny C., who went to Lexington, Kentucky, got out, started meetings in New York City in late 49, and this is a pamphlet that he adapted from the Addicts Anonymous, Our Way of Life. Okay? And we also, we put this one up here because this, we wanted to put it up and show you that it was printed at the Rikers Island Print Shop Inmate Vocational Training Program. Okay. Now, this is another one that happened in 1957. We're taking you along chronologically here. Oh, is it 55? Yeah, I'm sorry. Lynn A. in Montreal, Canada, who wrote Danny C. in New York, and Danny sent her that Our Way of Life pamphlet. She gets on the ball here and takes, this is from page 68, I think, in the big book. I'm not sure.
That's
she,
chapter 5.
Chapter 5, okay. And she takes this page from the big book and starts adapting it to addicts. And it, up here, she said, you see here, it's prepared by the Montreal group of Narcotics Anonymous. Okay. And here she starts, we admitted we were powerless, and first she wrote it over drugs, and then she wrote, we were addicts, that our lives had become unmanageable.
So taking, again, other addicts taking Alcoholics Anonymous literature and trying to take that existing format, adapt it to fit addicts. So that's kind of, again, part of that evolution of getting literature. And this was in Montreal in 1955.
Now we have in Northern California in 1972, this is a part of West Coast NA, which we have today. They still were doing adaptations of AA's literature. They created a pamphlet called This Is NA, but it's a direct, almost plagiarism of This Is AA. Okay. Now, from the This Is NA, they put a pamphlet out, an IP pamphlet, and this was on the tables until 1980 or 81. I'm not really sure when it went off. But this is a direct plagiarism of AA's.
We made a decision is contained within a way of life.
There you go. That's right.
And so this was extracted from the NA way of life.
And we're going to show you here AA's version of something.
And it's, again, that adapting the language and changing it to fit. So in AA's version.
Yeah, it says, quite naturally, the prospect of life without alcohol seemed a dreary one. We feared our new friends in AA would be dull. Or even worse yet, wild-eyed evangelists. Okay, now here's
so
NA's.
Narcotics Anonymous.
Dude. Yeah, and here's NA's version. Quite naturally, the prospect of life without drugs seemed distasteful and dull. We feared that our new friends in NA would either be square, or worse yet, be fanatics.
Reservation, well, maybe I can blow a little weed, you know, every second Tuesday of the month. Nobody'd be any wiser. It won't hurt me. Or I can take a few pills now and again when I'm down the beach or when I go visit my aunt somewhere. I get away with it. But we know we can't. But the big AA book brings out the same idea, and we laugh at it, about the jaywalker. And it's exactly the same way of thinking. The jaywalker who would continually run out in the street in front of cars, in front of fire engines, in front of trolley cars, just for the thrill of beating them. See? Eventually one day he got hit, landed in the hospital. After a couple of days he gets out and he does the same thing again. You say, this guy is nuts. And yet this is exactly what we do. We keep doing it again, and we know we can't win.
Okay, so who is that? Okay, so that's Jimmy Tennant. And what would you do if you walked into a meeting at Narcotics Anonymous and they were reading the big book or talking about it?
Look for the time machine.
Look for the time
machine. A lot of us would walk out.
Yeah, so, but it was not uncommon, even for Jimmy K, to be referencing something from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous to help frame the topic and discussion in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. That was in 1962. And we put that in there for, again, the context of what recovery sounded like based on the literature that was available at that time. Now, through Danny here, Lloyd had the opportunity to actually see Jimmy Kinnon's first edition big book. Okay? And we want to show you some of the pictures from it because it's very rich. You have his father signing his big book, Dear Son. Many happy returns to the way you and your family in AA. You have Dean Haig recently celebrated 50 years clean signing his book. You've got early members Penny Kennedy and Bob Barry in here. You have his brother, who was also in recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous, signing his big book. And interestingly, you have Lois Wilson signing his big book. So the big book played a big role for Jimmy and, you know, was kind of the main literature that was influencing many addicts at that time. And we put that in there for context. I'm still going, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We spent time up there going, who's doing which slide? So this is what the rest of the presentation is about. How did we got our book? We want to talk about the spark for a book by addicts for addicts, and that's the important concept that we want to introduce. No longer borrowing from another fellowship. No longer borrowing literature that was written for alcoholics, but actual literature by addicts for addicts. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the literature conferences, how the book was written. There are so many stories that need to be told and memories that need to be preserved. And like Boyd and I have talked about, you know, we think of this process as blood, sweat, and tears, getting these basic texts. And we want people to remember those stories. And by presenting about this, we hope more people will come forward with those stories that need to be documented and preserved, because it's really important. And we are going to show the influence of Alcoholics Anonymous on the writing of the basic text as we go through this. And finally, we'll talk about the impact of the basic text on the fellowship. So we're going to start with the spark in San Francisco that led to the Basic Tech, when Bo meets Jimmy Kay and Greg P. Bo travels out there to the 7th World Convention in San Francisco in 1977, and we're going to listen to him talk about it.
Well, he had the World Convention planned in San Francisco. So I made a deal with this other guy, Tommy B, that he would go out there, and if he couldn't go, I would go. But one of us would go out there. And wound up, we both went. Thank you. So we got to San Francisco, and you are getting to know me a little bit tonight. Can you imagine, let's see, I was 29 and 30 when I got clean. So I was probably like 33 years old, so it would be a much younger version of me walking around trying to look nonchalant, asking who's working on the book. You know, I'd say, like, it's nice weather out here. I like this convention. Who's working on the book? I mean, I was about as subtle as a rip bat. And they kept, like, go over here, go over here, go over here, go over here. And I kept going wherever I was told. And within about 3 or 4 intercept actions like that, I wound up at registration where I met about half of the people in World Services in 15 minutes. Jimmy Kay, Chuck Skinner, bunches of them, Simon, Jack Welly, Bob Barrett, and Greg Pierce. And so Jimmy says, hey, Greg, this guy's from Atlanta, and he's asking about who's working on the book. And so they sent me off with Greg. They palmed me off on Greg. And so we hit it off. I mean, he had read a lot of science fiction, and I was science fiction. So I said, well, what's the score with the book and all? And he says, well, nobody work on it. And I said, is that right? Why not? And the saying was that addicts in recovery can't write. So I said, so does that mean they've tried and failed, or that they haven't tried? He said, well, mostly they haven't tried. I said, well, who can run on this stuff? He said, well, any member. I said, well, I'm a member. And, you know, emblematically in that little conversation, you know, I was thinking about all the dead people and the horrible way we die. And, you know, writing's not really that goddamn hard. And, so anyway, with his from the top more or less clearance, I started writing some stuff when I went home. I mean, he took me down to some oldest meetings in the world, you know, in California and Hollywood and all that next week. But mainly, I felt like I had permission, you know. And I felt like if I did something, then I could get other people to do stuff.
All right, so pop quiz. What was the theme for that convention in 1977? Now we're thousands, right? All right, now for extra credit. Who was the band? Armin Hammer, right on, disco. And if you need to know about disco, see Jim after. And he'll bring you up to speed on that, along with the typewriters and carbon copy and all that stuff.
I still have a disco suck shirt.
But what are the important things that you hear Bo saying there? Why are they doing this?
For the need.
Addicts are dying. Of course. Yeah, what's taking so long? Exactly. Like, who needs it? You have to get permission. Do you have to be a professional? Who can do this stuff? And he goes out there and he finds out nobody's doing the work, but anybody can do it. And writing's not that hard. So this is important stuff, understanding the drive to get this going.
All right, now I'm going to introduce you to this person who Jim called a jolly guy like Jerry Garcia. His name is Greg P. He's a member of the Board of Trustees. He wrote the NA3, which was our first service structure. He also wrote IP number 9, Living the Program, IP number 12, The Triangle of Self-Obsession. The story in the Basic Text is titled, I Was Different. He passed away on April, like the 29th of 1999, with 28 years of fame. Let's listen to Greg talk about the beginnings of the book.
I think the actual process started, at least for this attempt, but actively started in San Francisco. I mean, the things that led up to that, the writing letters, the looking to people, the encouraging people, the phone calls and everything else, those were all setting the stage. I really believe the actual process started in San Francisco in 1977 at the 7th World Convention. And it grew from there. I want to read a letter that I think is real indicative that Bo sent me. In December of 1977, this follows, we first met at the World Convention in San Francisco. Bo came down with me and spent a few days at the house. Here's a letter, and I think this letter really speaks to some of the spirit of the basic text, of the process. Dear Greg, guess who bought a typewriter? I hope you have a nice Christmas. This is December 16th, 1977. Please say hi to Lois and the baby. Hope to see you next year. I've gotten off to a rolling start with the writing. I've started umpteen pamphlets and worked on a few notes for the NA book. My friends here know of my efforts, and I hope to get a few of them together soon for input and discussion. Hopefully this will take place here and elsewhere. Thank God it's begun. At this point, I feel we have to involve as many people, as many as possible, and make sure we cover all points of view. Involving people might struggle the effort and controversy, but I really trust the Spirit and believe that we'd be poor servants to leave them out. Somehow, if we could get our best minds working on this in harmony, I just know it would strengthen the gut of the program. In my thinking, it has occurred to me what we're up against, like, is NA a cure for addiction? How to help doctors learn to treat or react to addiction? I would hate to see any valid point of view left out. Also, I would hate to see any great length of time elapse without some progress. Please write to me, my friend, your friend Bo.
Jimmy and Greg encouraged Bo in January of 1979. Bo sends out a letter to the fellowship asking for input. And it says, we realize that some may be skeptical about this effort, but we're really not doing this for selfish reasons. People who could be helped are dying every day from our disease. We're telling the story of my folks now and this will make our program more available to you. In April of 1979, Bo is elected the chairperson of the World Literature Committee, and everything kicks into high gear. Letters start going out to the fellowship, and we've got one here from the mainline. And I'll read some of this to you. It says, we now have a literature committee in Venice, California, San Fernando Valley, California, Wichita, Kansas, Scranton, PA, Atlanta, Georgia, and prospective committees in Minneapolis and Miami. Okay. We've got one here. It says, a literature committee in San Fernando Valley is working on collecting material on where our literature has come from in the past. The chairperson of this committee is a volunteer service worker of the WSO. Okay. Here's a letter that Bo sent out to the fellowship announcing the Wichita Conference, which is the first work committee. It says, we all need to attend the Wichita Conference for NA Literature, October 6th and 7th. We'll soon be here. He goes on to say, it was during this period that I discovered that God wants our book. God, as I understand him, is hungry for NA Literature. Been waiting for years. And it goes on here, this is wonderful. We pray for contributions. We don't need hundreds of members trying to get others to write. We need hundreds writing.
So the World Literature Conferences, there were seven of them, and we're going to talk about that They were between October of 79 and January of 82. There are 412 addicts that are documented to have attended a World Literature Conference. They came from 25 states and one province. One of the things that we know, and this is again part of the untold story, is that there are countless other unknown addicts who contributed through local literature committees and individual submissions. And so we hope to learn more about that as we continue to study this. This is the flyer for the first World Lit Conference. It was a two-day conference. The theme of the conference is You Are the Book. One of the things that's nice about it, it says, has an option on the registration, would you like to stay in an NA member's home? And what you really see is like every effort being made for people to be able to attend and participate. Eliminate barriers, you don't have to worry about where you're going to have to stay. Come stay in an NA member's home, we'll put you up. The 25 addicts registered, 34 addicts from six states were listed in the minutes. They came from California, Georgia, Kansas, Nebraska, Tennessee, and Virginia. And in this clip, we'll hear about Joseph P. talk about going to Wichita.
And I was told about the first World Literature Conference that was coming up a few months later up in Kansas. And so I'd arranged for the Beau to come back, come through Memphis and pick me up and go up there. I didn't know what it was going to be about. And on the way, talked about a lot of things. And we talked about we were going to write this wee book. And they kept talking about for days this wee book we're going to write. And all this information that Greg had and other people had was getting piles, and the copy machine was running, and I couldn't figure out how they're going to get all this material in a small book. And it went on and on and on, and what I finally figured out after that convention is the we book is that we together and not small. And but I never asked, so that's where I was.
The big thing that came out of the first World Literature Conference was the Handbook for Narcotics Anonymous Literature Committees. And what this did is it conveyed a core value that guided this entire process, and this is really important. Input was encouraged and actively sought. It was highly valued from all members of the fellowship, regardless of clean time or experience. Everybody was encouraged to participate. And you see this core value contained many places within the handbook. For instance, every member is welcome to contribute material to this effort, right on page one. We need all types of stories, and yours might just be the one to help your type of addict, so trying to make sure there's enough identification. We ask all members to send in their material without worrying too much if it is any good or not. And this is a great line. Some of the best is probably in trash cans right now. We write something down, we don't feel very confident about it, we throw it out. We see other things like the theme is You Are the Book. And it says here at the bottom, it says, in a real sense, ours is a movement of the message from those who have it to those who are dying for it. Again, kind of underlying the urgency of this matter. We see later on recommendations about how to thank people for their contributions. Thank you for your literature contribution. We are all just recovering addicts, right? Anonymity, equal, with a common desire for new literature for our brothers and sisters still suffering from our disease. We feel we must reach a certain level of freedom to express ourselves to have a useful and reasonably complete basic text. We feel we must include the thought, feelings, and experiences of a great many of our members to have a reasonably complete first edition. So this is what came out of that first World Literature Conference, and this is what went out to help start informing other addicts, other groups, other literature committees about how they could contribute to this process. They had a very interesting recommendation about profanity. What do you think they said about profanity? Don't use it as necessary. They said don't use it. Why did they say not to use it? Okay, that's one idea, that it kind of lowers the spiritual value or content. What's another kind of practical or pragmatic reason why they didn't want profanity in the
literature? They wanted it printed and sent out to mass.
Okay, so they wanted to make sure that it could be printed and it could be accessible to addicts anywhere. So if an addict was in prison, would the prison accept this type of material if it contained profanity? If an addict was in an institution, would they let that addict, that literature go in there if it contained that? So this is kind of what they said. Stories can include slang, but not profanity, since it would limit the availability of our book in some areas and institutions. And just trying to make sure that the message is widely available. Now, the nice thing is going through and listening to some of the people who participate in the literature conferences is that literally any input that was submitted was held on to and not thrown in the trash. We've heard people who participated in it say, you know, they had napkins with stuff written on it that was kept, looked at. And we found stuff in Kermit's box that had like a little scrap here that says, the word fuck should not be used. And that's the one place that we will introduce that language into this part of the presentation.
Yeah, we won't use profanity.
But I mean, somebody did, and this was just a half sheet torn off, just written in. This is what I think. And that's the type of input that was coming in that's so rich and important to understand.
Along in this book right here, it gave subjects for literature committees, suggestions for subjects in literature committees to write upon. And we've got a couple of them here that we're really going that we enjoyed. One of them is beer and grass is no excuse. So, okay. Another one is little old ladies can get sick too. And this one you won't see in any place in recovery literature. 13th step in. Okay, now we get to the second World Literature Conference in Lincoln, Nebraska. And, as you can see, we've still got, it's pretty much a handwritten flyer here, but it says, come and help us write the big book. So see, we're still working on what we're calling this, okay? Okay. Second World Literature Conference is held in Lincoln, Nebraska from September the 8th through the 14th. It's a little bit longer now, of 1980. And we got 36 members from 8 states and 1 province. California, Georgia, Kansas, Nebraska, Ohio, Oregon, Tennessee, Pennsylvania, and then from Vancouver, British Columbia. There were 7 members that also attended the first Wichita Literature Conference. And one very important thing happened here, very important. 2 members from the Board of Trustees showed up, Greg Pierce and Bob Barrett. And what this did is this gave validity to this movement, okay? It was just not some folks here on the East Coast getting all cranked up and wanting to do something. We got some guys now from the Board of Trustees that are showing up. Now, Greg suggests using the chapters from the Little White Book as the basis for our basic text, as the outline for it. So basically, you've got the chapters that are in the Little, or the headings that are in the Little White Book, plus 2 other chapters. And in Bo's, what we don't have up here is in Bo's book that he wrote, The Story of the Basic Text, he thinks that it's, you know, Greg and Jimmy have suggested this. Okay? Additional 2 chapters that were added is just for today, the more will be revealed. Which Greg, if we learned in listening to the tapes, envisioned this as kind of like AA's A Vision for You. Mm-hmm. So here we have another tie-in and some influence. Okay. Now, what I'm getting ready to talk with you about here, and it gives me a great honor to do this at this very moment, and I'll tell you why afterwards, is that when your sponsor asks you to do something, you to think about this particular thing that
we're getting ready to show you. Well, my neighbor offered me a ream of paper and the use of his copy machine, so that wasn't the problem. The problem was postage. So there were 5 of us sitting around the kitchen table at my place one day, and I said, made the comment, well, I guess I've sold blood for plasma to support my Aunt Meta. We can probably make a trip to the plasma center and get a pint of blood is $15 and a roll of stamps is $15. And so the guys all went down to the blood bank and sold blood, plasma center, and sold blood to get, and we went back to the house and laughing and joking, and each of us had a roll of stamps in our pocket, and we used the address flyer and send them to every address that I could get my hands on.
Okay. Boy, Steve.
I want to applaud Jim.
I did too. Theme is blood, sweat, and tears. Okay, this is the theme of sacrifice that's all through the making of all those attacks. And it's people like Jim who made that possible so that you and I could be brothers today.
And what's really kind of important about the spirit of this whole process is the idea of including as many people as possible. So selling plasma so we can buy stamps, so we can get the invitations out, the announcements to every addict that we can find. Real effort was made to include addicts from all over and not make this an isolated process. And that's what we hear there. Please do.
Process up here that we call cut and paste. Now, it's a little bit different than what we do today. It's at the Lincoln Conference, there was 800 pages of materials that were brought here to assemble in a pretty unique fashion. Okay. Material was first cut, and they would look at it and they'd say, okay, we think this goes in this particular section right here, or we think it goes in this particular, but this paragraph over here, we think needs to go over here in chapter 3, or this particular needs to go in chapter 4, and they filed it under different headings. And then they pasted it, they had a sheet of paper, they pasted different things in there so that it would actually have some cohesion to it. And we're going to listen to Motorcycle Ed talk to you about this. So,
I believe that the second one that I showed up at, the real treat for me was get to do what all the other people had got to do in kindergarten that I didn't get to do because I didn't get to go to kindergarten with little itty bitty scissors and cut up pieces of paper and take the paste stick and put it on the back and paste it on another piece of paper. And the kid in me, of course I didn't know what to call it at that time, just went berserk. You know, hot diggity doggy dum. In 12 hours of this in his life. Yeah, you know, and somebody walk up and start rubbing you back.
So that's how the material was put together. You can see some stuff's handwritten, some stuff's typed, all different, just kind of married together. Jim, would you mind reading something for us? One of the things that we've done is we've gone through some of the old newsletters like the Rainbow Connection, and we'd just like you to read this little summary that's circled here. And these are things that were written after these conferences that provide us with great insight into what was going on at that time.
The Lincoln Conference will be remembered as the occasion where our book began to take shape. Individual sacrifice and dedication for Lincoln Fellowship went far beyond what was setting up at the conference. Positive atmosphere. Lodging for attending members in homes and fine meetings. Each night, and a long way toward raising the spirit and enthusiasm for the effort that got us the first floor of the Lincoln Federal Building, fine copier, which turned out to be the main piece of equipment for the conference, five letters. About 10,000 copies were consumed at the conference. We worked together the last 72 hours almost straight through. Personal support from the members of the Lincoln Nebraska made all this possible. We are grateful to your members.
Thank you, Jim. Very much so.
That was written in October 1980, and the gratitude that they speak about there continues to this day. And the addicts that we haven't had the opportunity to meet who played a role in that, we have gratitude for.
Very much so. And I've got something now. Okay, this is it. We've got a history here that, that Bo wrote. I'm going to ask my friend Kenny M to come up and read this.
Covenant
Agnew Day. Although relatively few of the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous stood in the Lincoln Federal Building in September 1980, the spirits of our contributors and of those still suffering addicts were all around us, encouraging us, sharing with us their hope and pain. Those who enjoyed the actual effort were but servants of a larger whole. As a result of an addicts meeting in Lincoln, Nebraska in September 1980, a book, a dream, will be realized, but it would be inaccurate to say that we have written a book. We all came from many parts of the country and many walks of life. We have all but the grace of our higher power and the help of our fellow addicts survived a killing disease. In an effort to continue to survive, we have met here to share our experience, strength, and hope. The book is just a reflection of this effort. It is in this spirit that our book will come forth. Addicts all over the world will have the Narcotics Anonymous book for comfort and for study. When we find ourselves by ourselves, we need not be alone. We will have our book and we will have each other.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to talk about the Third World Literature Conference. We're going to hear Joe P. talk about it again. They have a thing here that says consensus in Memphis, which I think is a great theme for the conference. And with gratitude in our cleanliness, not exactly the language we use today, we dedicate our NA book to the loving service of a higher power.
I'm an addict from Memphis. My name's Joseph. They were going to set up a time to have the next one. And, of course, me being the assertive self, good controlling addict that I was, I wanted to volunteer in Memphis. And so I did, and of course I was the only clean member in Memphis, but things worked out, and we had that literature conference that the grade book came out of.
We're going to kind of talk through this, but one of the nice things is that when conventions or literature conferences went to a particular city, it helped infuse Narcotics Anonymous. See it grow. Here's a registration form for the Third World Lit Conference. $12. You see Naranon now appearing on this. It was held January 31st through February 8th. There were 73 people attended, so this was the biggest lit conference of the first three. And there were addicts that came from 14 different states. And these are the minutes from the January 31st meeting, and what you see is that they have a goal for the conference of completing a final draft of the Narcotics Anonymous Big Book, and to be able to submit literature to the World Service Conference 2 months prior to May 1st. So pretty ambitious. And you see attending are some folks from Pennsylvania. You have Ted S., Teresa W., and George R. And this is also support coming from Alcoholics Anonymous. Bo had written to them, and they wrote back saying, we send warm wishes for a successful conference in Memphis from the General Service staff. Now, work continued between conferences, Chapter 1, Who's an Addict, was submitted by the Atlanta Literature Committee. Chapter 6, The 12 Traditions of Narcotics Anonymous, worked on by Greg P. Chapter 7, Recovery and Relapse, was submitted by San Francisco. And Chapter 8, We Do Recover, was submitted by Philadelphia Literature Committee. Right?
Yeah, baby.
Now, this is from a 1981 newsletter out of Philadelphia, the Narcotics Anonymous book, History, How It Started, and How Philadelphia Became Involved, and we wanted to include that. It says, in May of 1980, several addicts from Bristol, areas formed a step reform committee to help with the writing of the 12 steps of NA. After meeting the World Literature Committee chairman at the Literature Committee meeting held at the first East Coast Convention, they returned to Philadelphia and formed the Bristol Literature Committee of NA and began compiling material for the NA book. Literature committees in different cities around the country took chapters to work on. Each committee did what they could to bring each chapter to a second draft. The committees kept in touch by phone once a week to get progress reports and support each other. So we wanted to tie in what Philadelphia and Pennsylvania did to contribute to this effort, and also to again show that there's a lot of unknown contributions by people working in different literature committees to contribute, even if they didn't end up attending one of the literature conferences. And this is input that was submitted by the Bristol Literature Committee. This is a ninth step handwritten out. This is stuff that was contained in Joseph P's files.
This is Greg P. Now, Greg wrote the interpretation of the 12 traditions that is in our basic text. And he was in Oregon at the time, and in precious little time, they didn't want to wait for Greg to ship it down to Memphis. So what they did...
Listen, one of the things that did happen in Memphis was, how long was the conversation phone call?
Two calls totaling over nine hours.
And a little gal sitting there, and they'd take turns typing. You know, one person would hold the phone to their ear, and they would type, and another person would rub their back so they wouldn't cramp up. And, you know, just over and over and over, times again of the selflessness.
No time to waste.
That's it. Lois told me one time that actually those two particular phone calls ended up costing over $300 at that particular time. And she knew because their phone got disconnected. Okay. And Bo had told me actually that during this process, because this was not at a time of cell phones, they hadn't paid for long distance call. And Bo said, if you were involved in the literature committee, you regularly got your phone cut off. So now I'm introduced to a man named Jim M. And he became involved during the Memphis Literature Conference, and despite business commitments, he flew back and forth from Ohio to Memphis several times to help out with the preparation and the publication of Greater Newport. And Jim was, what Bo told us, that Jim was relied upon heavily to catch a logical flaw or to carry out an approved plan of action. And he hosted, actually, the Fifth World Literature Conference in Warren, Ohio. But this is what Jim's strong suit is, and what he really, in my opinion, should be honored about. Because he was very instrumental in emphasizing a consistent language within NA. Okay? And let's listen to Jim talk a little bit.
I'm Jim Head. As I got my direction, this is a style sheet. And what we're trying to do is use the same words, we'll mean the same thing all the way through. There's something that came out in early literature conference work that use the words you mean. Say what you mean. Just for example, I'll give you one example, and we're going to run off some more copies and get out of some of the mistakes on this one, so there's one for everybody, hopefully. Use the word or phrase clean in reference to the condition of abstinence from drugs, or instead of clean and sober, clean, serene, straight, or sober. Is that understandable? if it's not just asking that somebody
has cleaned these out roads.
Cleaning previously had roads.
I'm clean today. Not clean today.
So what we're seeing is the beginnings of starting to formulate our language here, because as work came in, we had definitely the mixture, and so in the editorial process, in the process of review and editing, this was used right here to change the words from sobriety to recovery. Okay?
He will be here tomorrow.
Yes, he will.
Oh, okay. All right, you got it.
Yeah.
We can make it today. That's the stuff tomorrow.
Looking forward to seeing you.
All right, so this is, we're going to hear about this idea of group conscience. It's really important, and again, it speaks to this idea that no matter how long you've been a member, how long you've been clean, what your experience is, that what you have to say and what your thoughts are important. And again, it speaks to this idea of inclusion and the importance of being able to form a group conscience, not by one or two people saying what their experience is on it, but hearing from everyone. What I want you to listen to here is how they handled an issue that came up and the unique process that they took to try to arrive at group conscience, which is really about, you know, God's will.
And at that conference, I think we really started to develop what in our minds, or what was spiritually attuned to what we thought group conscience was, is writing in committee and writing in groups and letting everybody that wanted to be a part of, and not limiting anyone's participation for any reason.
All right, so you hear that. First of all, everyone's included, everyone's input is valued. And we're going to hear this audio clip, and so this is them talking about an issue, and it provides us a chance to experience what this would have been like to be sitting there in Memphis, part of this process of making decisions that resulted in the book. And we'll hear a woman named Gina suggest that, similar to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that our text should have an appendix that expands upon spiritual concepts. Now we'll hear Bo ask for everyone's input, and here's what's important. He says, one at a time. He says, we don't want people cutting someone off or asking questions. We just want to hear from every person. Now, can be kind of a tedious process, and it takes some discipline and some real commitment to spiritual principles, to practices. And this is what they did when they were writing the basic text. And so we're going to hear this. Picture yourself, 1981, sitting in Memphis, talking about decisions that influenced what went in the book.
I'm Gina, and I'm definitely an addict. Okay, the way they handle a lot of this in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is by referring you to the appendix at the end and really expounding on and taking on the spiritual concept and the fact that it's not any one particular kind of God. I think it would really help for us to have a short appendix. Short, but very to the point,
attended. So I know that people here that I've said about this now, and I want to give a brief statement from everybody about this. And go around to everybody. Well, they may or may not. Let's hear from them in a very brief form, one in a order, just all the way around, and no repeat until we get around, no discussion until we get around. Then we'll have to see what the group has to say, and then get into some more detail.
Do you have a role on this type of vote?
No. It's a field for it.
I'm Dan, I'm an addict. Sorry, same position this guy here. I didn't like people to talk about God when I first heard it. When the treatment had got my stuff together a little bit, I liked the idea of having higher power, and I liked the freedom that gave me. If I want to consider the stars and the moon, or if I want to consider the sunlight or whatever, to it's a higher power thing, and it is a very important subject to be discussed. It doesn't offend me now. You know, God, I believe in God now. I didn't then. The higher power is good now, or then. God is good for right now. So I think higher power, God, Him, and all that stuff.
Alright, so who got clean when you could smoke and weed? So, here's the thing, that when you're listening to these tapes, you hear two consistent things. You hear chair scraping and lighters going. So what we see there is, again, this is a little bit of a tedious process, but we're going to talk about this issue that's proposed, and we're going to let each person briefly say what their experience, thoughts, or input is to it. We're not going to cut them off, we're not going to interrupt them, we're not going to say, but wait, or let me ask you this. We're going to go around, and like Jim was saying when he spoke, this idea of learning to listen. We're going to learn to listen to each other, and when we get through with that process, I'm going to have a better understanding of where you take, what your take of it is. You'll have a better understanding of what my take of it is, and hopefully through that, we'll come to a group conscience. All right, so one of the things I look for, like in my home group, is who does the talking when we're talking about stuff? Is it just one person or two people? Is it just the experienced people? And for the members who've been there for a while, what do we do to encourage the input from those who may be attending their first business meeting? I know you may not know a lot about this, but we're talking about an issue and it's really important to us to hear what you think. Now, for addicts who spend a lot of time being alienated, ostracized, and excluded, what a change to come into a fellowship where there are members who will take the time to say, you know, what you have to say and what you think is important to us. And that's what we see consistently through this process. Now, can anybody tell me, this is a telegram, and again, you can talk to Jim if you want to understand what a telegram is. I mean, you got a long list of things you already put out there that you need to talk to and explain about. So I'm just throw that in there.
I'm still able to straight it.
This is a telegram sent from Jimmy to them during the Third World Lit Conference, and it says, "The full fruit of the labor of love lies in the harvest, and it always comes in its right season." So where is that? Okay, where else is it? Right here, this nice flyer that was done by the History Committee. The full fruit of the labor of love lives in the harvest. That always comes in the right season.
Now, we've got wrapping up Memphis, and we're going to ask Dan to come up and read what was written about what has happened at Memphis.
The 1,440 service hours put in by Thursday morning cannot account for the great leap in any literature taking place in Memphis, Tennessee at the Third World Literature Conference. The fact of our progress seemed to reflect three things. First, that a great deal of groundwork was accomplished at the Wichita and Lincoln Literature Conferences that is only now being evidenced. Second, that the great deal of work has been done since the Lincoln Literature Conference by individuals and areas, and their work has been unseen until Memphis. Third, and probably the greatest factor of all, is that a potential for new literature has been built up in the spoken traditions of Narcotics Anonymous over the last 28 years.
Okay, now, at the end of the Third Literature Conference, the banquet that they had, this was the cake they made, and they did this. And here it is. Anyway, here's some pictures of it right here. There's Noel, who was actually the World Service Conference chairperson that was coming aboard, elect, Bo, Linda, Bo, and Joe Poo right there. He's that kind of guy.
Nolan just passed away.
Yes, he did. He did just recently. He lost him. This is a page out of the Gray Review form right here, and it was sent out. You'll see the numbers on the side over there. And this was sent out so that that my home group could sit down and have a group conscience about what we thought should be included or should not be included. And this was the reply sheet that was also sent with it. You could put your comments on the page, the line number, what you thought about it. Okay, I'm going to talk to you about Joseph P. Joseph P. served as a World Literature Chair Treasurer during all seven of the World Literature Conferences. And Boas states that without Joseph's dedication and commitment, he believes that Narcotics Anonymous would not have a book. And here's an assembly line of the Gray Review Forms, which the things that we've seen show about 1,200 of them were being printed. This is a man named Gene L., who is still clean today with the Gray Review Forms getting ready to be mailed out. Here's it's a shipping mandate actually that was sent to Jimmy K. Jimmy got two of them. Okay. And here is at the 1982 World Service, 81 World Service Conference, I'm sorry. This is the book that they brought to it, and this is actually the book that everybody signed. And we've got somebody, Teresa signed it from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania up here. And it's now in Chris.
And we're kind of in the home stretch here. Appreciate everyone's patience and time and attention. We're going to kind of just run through these remaining literature conferences. The next one was in Santa Monica. You've seen the book, and the time has come. It was in April of 81. You had 146 people attend, and members came from 15 different states. The next one was in Warren, Ohio, the Fifth World Literature Conference, that others may find the freedom of recovery we have found. And this was held June 29th to July 5th. And this is something that Jim N., who will be here tomorrow, spearheaded. And we had 115 people attend, members attending from 18 different states. And we're going to listen to a woman named Sally talk about this conference.
You know, there's a lot of things that happened with writing that, in the process of that book, and a lot of miracles. And in Ohio, we were giving up the workload. You know, who's going to do what, who's going to work on what other team, and so on and so forth. And there was a guy, and he raised his hand, and he said, I can't read, and I can't write, but I can cook. And if each of you will give me $3 a day, I'll cook you some good meals. And he did. I mean, that guy was so special. I mean, it was so special that he had the courage to do that. How many of us would have been able to do that? He only had a few months. He didn't have that much time. And by the way, Bob Lee tells me he's still coming today.
Kind of the theme that we would say is that in Narcotics Anonymous and through this process, there's room around the table for everyone. Everyone's allowed to be a part of and find a way to contribute. The Sixth World Literature Conference was held in Miami. There was a guy who participated who rode his bicycle from Lincoln, Nebraska, stopping along the way, made it all the way down to Miami to attend the World Lit Conference. Sorry to say, boy. Yeah. And I'm embarrassed to say that Boyd and I drove up here from North Carolina. There were 60 people there, came from 15 states, and then the 7th World Literature Conference was in Philadelphia. And it was January 15th to the 19th, 1982, 67 people attended. And what they worked on was preparing the personal stories. And so they had a list of all the personal stories here, and we want this story in our book, yes or no. Questions about how many stories should we have, how do you want to deal with references to AA, and so help people out there. And so we're just going to kind of go through a quick visual slide of the maps. These are the states represented in the first. And we start seeing it grow by the Second World Literature Conference, the start seeing addicts from all over the country get involved and participating and contributing to this process. What's interesting is that, you know, the majority of people attended one Lincoln conference. They were one of the majority. But you saw other people who really stayed through the entire process that kept a lot of that continuity. So you had Bo Esch, attended all seven. You had Jim Evan, will be here tomorrow, attended five. Teresa from Pennsylvania attended five of them. George R. Attended four. Al R., Bobby B., and Roy D. from Ohio attended three. And then you see a number of people from Pennsylvania and Ohio who attended two more of the different conferences.
And now we have, at the 1982 World Service Conference in April, we have the motion to approve the bill. This right here is an order form. It's Greg had made a mention on how to raise money to be able to publish the book, because the World Service Office didn't have any money at that time, and so he had made a suggestion that they pre-order a special edition, and have a special numbered edition. It's called the Red Book. And they pre-sell them for $25. And this is an order form for that right there. And Herman actually has the letter that he had written suggesting that. But this is the book right here, which Jim showed you a copy of earlier.
Have you
heard
an interpretation of what that $25 was?
That's a good thing right there. It's probably
worth like $10,000. I think it's worth at least $10,000, maybe $20,000.
No, you're talking about inflation of $25.
Yeah,
right. What is $25 in today's terms?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I have
a
short
calculator on.
$2,500. You can sell it. Now, there's one person in this room I know who knows what this is, but does anybody else know this right here? We got two people. This is three people, four people, five people. Okay, this is a very rare book here. There's only two of them. They're called the Silver Edition. It was actually, they were made by an angel who came in at the very end of the process of making the books, because the people that we gave the original money to actually went bankrupt. It was a lady by the name of Jeannie who came in at the 11th hour and helped us get the basic text published. And she published, she had the printer print two of them, one for Jimmy, one for her. We have the inscriptions of both of them right here. And one of them is, Dear Jeannie from Jimmy, and then to Jimmy from Jeannie. So, it's pretty cool.
Where were they at? Where did you get the pictures of them?
One of them is owned by a guy named Johnny Brooks, the other is owned by Jimmy.
So, I thought that's...
Yes, Danny did. He took one of them. The other one was taken by a man named Steve L. on the West Coast.
He told me about them last year.
Yeah. It's they're really incredibly cool. And this is the commemorative copy of the One Camellia, which Danny got to take a picture of the number one. And this is the 20th anniversary copy. 25th anniversary copy.
And the 28th.
Yeah, right. And this is really cool right here, guys. This is this man named Tom C., whose story is called Mid-Pacific Serenity, which was originally in the first edition. Okay, it's in all the other editions. I'm not sure about the sixth. But on the very last line of it in the first edition, the very last line of our first edition, it reads, God is loving this man. How wonderfully fitting to end the book.
Okay. So to conclude, the impact of the book, it unified the message and language of Narcotics Anonymous, which is really important. As Boyd mentioned earlier, NA would not have had the financial resources to meet the challenges that grew in the 80s and 40s. And the amount of meetings that grew. You know, you started out, you had one meeting in 53, two in 59, this really slow growth of meetings, 39 meetings in 71, 764 meetings in 77 when Bo went out to San Francisco. When they started working on the book, there were about 3,000 meetings. The first edition comes out, Today, as of May 2012, there's 61,800 meetings. And you can see the rapid growth of Narcotics Anonymous after the basic text came out. Now, it's worth noting, there's a little dip you see, right? Boyd gets clean here and drives people out of the fellowship. Sends them to AA. Took a while for them to recover and for meetings to come back up. It just, you know, he had that much of an impact.
Exactly in 92
there?
93.
It looks like
92.
Oh,
well,
that would have been you, Jim.
90. Just
90. So the impact of the book, and this is not even actually current, it's been translated in more than 21 languages, making the message of Narcotics Anonymous available to so many others. We had the opportunity, we were called upon, like in the last hour, to say, hey, they're having a convention in Poland. They're just celebrating having the basic text translated into Polish. Would you put together, condense this into 12 slides or so, and send something to them over in Poland so that they can see the history and what it took for them to get a book in their own language? And without this book, the message of NA would have become fragmented and the fellowship could have been eclipsed by other recovery movements. The thing that we always want to end with is this idea of what is the basic text meant to you. That's kind of what we want people to think about. And we're happy to allow people, if you want to share about that, what the book has meant to you, that's cool. If you're dead tired and ready to get done, we can certainly wrap up. But we always do like to take the last few minutes for anyone who wants to talk about what the basic text has meant to you.
Yes. Today,
today.
About the red book, that 2,500 of them were printed, and they sold for the $25 so they could print 2,500 of the blue to sell for $8. And probably about 7-8 years ago, some of the red ones surfaced without a number on them, so there was actually more than 2,500 printed. But we don't know how many that don't have a number.
My name is Cheryl. Look at what it means to me. Because you know what, when I got clean, I always felt it. You know, and just reading my book just made me feel like a part of the process. You know, today I can actually say, I'm glad I'm an addict. You know, I'm glad I'm an addict. Because I've learned so much about me and a fellowship. How it works. This is awesome. At a time I and I look at my life today, and if I wouldn't have read that book, I know when I first got clean, somebody told me I shouldn't read it. I'm like, I'm gonna write it because that's the point. You know, and but as I read the book, I was finding out everybody's just like me. You know, always feeling left out, not being a part of. Part of something big.